This is VOA News. Reporting by remote, I'm David Byrd. President Joe Biden has taken his first steps to reverse the Trump administration's health care policies. Speaking to reporters in the Oval Office on Thursday, Biden said he signed two executive orders to undo the damage that Trump has done to health care.
There's nothing new that we're doing here other than restoring the Affordable Care Act and restoring the Medicaid to the way it was before Trump became president.
The directives cover a range of issues, including getting more Americans covered under health insurance and removing work requirements for low-income people getting Medicaid. The most concrete short-term impact will come from reopening healthcare.gov insurance markets, as coverage has shrunk amid economic turmoil due to the coronavirus pandemic. Biden is also directing health officials to weigh repealing a Trump rule that barred federally funded family planning clinics from referring women for abortions. Another drug maker says its COVID-19 vaccine seems effective. AP's Sagar Magani has details.
Maryland-based Novavax says the vaccine appears 89% effective in early findings from a British study, though it's not quite as effective against a virus variant spreading in the UK and another in South Africa. The U.S. now has its first two cases of the South African mutated strain, both in South Carolina, in adults with no recent travel history. Health officials say it's almost certain there are more infections not yet identified. The Novavax announcement comes amid worry about whether existing vaccines will be strong enough to protect against the variants, which seem to spread more easily. Sagar Magani, Washington.
Visit VOAnews.com for more. This is VOA News. The White House has condemned a decision by Pakistan's Supreme Court to release a Pakistani-British man convicted and later acquitted in the beheading of American journalist Daniel Pearl in 2002. White House spokesperson Jen Psaki said the decision to free Ahmed Omar Sheikh is an affront to terrorism victims everywhere, including Pakistan. She said the Biden administration is calling on the Pakistani government to quickly review its legal options, including allowing Sheikh to be extradited to the United States to stand trial. In a 2-1 ruling, Pakistan's Supreme Court cleared Sheikh and three other defendants in the case and ordered that they be freed immediately if not wanted in other cases. The four men had spent 18 years in jail for the brutal murder of Daniel Pearl, a Wall Street Journal reporter beheaded after being captured by Islamist militants while reporting in Pakistan following the September 11, 2001 attacks on the United States. The latest estimate of gross domestic product shows an economy still in the grip of the coronavirus pandemic, AP's Ben Thomas reports.
The Commerce Department says economic growth slowed sharply in the last 3 months of 2020, with the total output of goods and services growing at a 4% annual rate. That followed a record third quarter rebound from a stunning second quarter plunge brought on by restrictions aimed at curbing the spread of COVID-19. For the year, the U.S. economy contracted 3.5%, the largest amount in 74 years. And with nearly 10 million people still out of work, the outlook for this year remains clouded. Ben Thomas, Washington.
Cicely Tyson, the pioneering black actor who gained an Oscar nomination for her role as the sharecropper's wife in Sounder, has died. AP's Oscar Wells Gabriel reports.
If you saw her work on stage, screen, or on television, you'd be convinced that Cicely Tyson was born to be an actor. But she said in this 1994 Associated Press interview that the racial climate as she was coming up seemed to stack the odds against her.
As a child, we were not permitted to go to the movies. I never walked into a legitimate theater until I was a grown woman. And so the fact that I am an actress is a source of amazement.
Tyson went on to gain an Oscar nomination for her work in Sounder. She was also a Tony Award winner at the age of 88. And she touched the hearts of TV viewers in the starring role in the autobiography of Miss Jane Pittman. I'm Oscar Wells Gabriel.
On Wall Street, stocks rebounded from Wednesday's loss, with all three major indices closing in positive territory. The Dow Jones Industrials gained 0.99%, the S&P rose by 0.98%, the NASDAQ added 0.5%. Reporting by remote, I'm David Byrd, VOA News.
Morning Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 29, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Africa performs lowest on the 2020 Corruption Perception Index.
There are, of course, countries that have done better than others on the African continent in the fight against corruption. The difference that it makes in these countries is the rule of law and the sense that if people are engaged in corruption, they get punished.
Kenya denies interfering in Somalia's internal conflict. It will take time to straighten out the Trump-era travel ban. COVID fatigue risk is sparking a surge of new waves of infections in Africa. And Tanzania's opposition criticizes President Magufuli for his stance on COVID-19 vaccine.
Africa is struggling because of the limited supply of vaccination. And here you have a president of the second largest economy in East Africa saying that vaccinations are problematic.
And Zimbabwe passes a law to fine citizens who refuse to take COVID-19 vaccine. Those stories plus Samson Omale's sports are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Transparency International says persisting corruption in many African countries is undermining healthcare systems and contributing to democratic backsliding amid the COVID-19 pandemic. In its 2020 Corruption Perception Index, released on Thursday, the group says countries that perform well on the index invest more in healthcare and are less likely to violate democratic norms and institutions or the rule of law. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Milwaukee, USA, Kenya is still among the most corrupt countries in Africa as the country struggles to manage a surging coronavirus.
COVID-19 is not only a health crisis but also a corruption crisis. As countries with higher level of corruption invest less in public health. This is according to the Corruption Perception Index report released by Transparency International yesterday Thursday, stating that Equatorial Guinea, Sudan, Somalia and South Sudan are the most corrupt countries in sub-Saharan Africa. Kenya obtained a score of 31 out of 100, which still falls before the sub-Saharan average of 32 and global average of 43, indicating very serious levels of corruption in public sector. Samuel Kimeo, former Transparency International Kenya Executive Director, said that Kenya's recent mismanagement of COVID-19 funds and lack of equipment for health officers has exposed Kenya's weak in fighting corruption, especially bringing to book those involved.
There has been depressed investments in the health sector in many countries. At least that's true of Kenya. It would be important at this point that all the audits that have been done with respect to procurement and the use of resources that were dedicated to the fight against COVID-19 are made public and their recommendations are implemented. And those who are found culpable, punished and punished expeditiously.
The 2020 report indicates that out of the 180 countries that research was conducted, two-thirds of those countries scored below 50, with countries that recorded higher scores on the Corruption Perception Index having integrity challenges, including lack of transparency in public spending in response to COVID-19. A Kenyan youth, Washington Alinho, says corruption in Kenya has been a reason most Kenyans are jobless and that the government is not doing well in terms of combating COVID-19 despite having donations that he says have not been well utilized.
We've seen billions of money being released and in fact we've gone for debts from other countries in the name of supporting the coronavirus, but the end result of it all, the money is put in the pockets of these prolific prominent leaders of ours.
Mr. Kimeo, however, said that the worst performed countries in Africa should borrow a leaf on how to fight corruption from countries that have achieved in fighting corruption.
There are, of course, countries that have done better than others on the African continent in the fight against corruption. The difference that it makes in these countries is the rule of law and the sense that if people are engaged in corruption, they get punished. In our case, and I think on the continent, continent. There are, in fact, good practices that can be borrowed from many of our countries.
The Transparency International Kenya says oversight institutions in the country, such as the Ethics and Anti-Corruption Commission, the Office of the Auditor General, and the Office of the Controller of Budget, should be closely involved in respective coordination efforts to steer comprehensive accountability measures that will prevent COVID resources from wastage. This comes a week after President Uhuru Kenyatta made remarks in a local radio interview that Kenya loses at least $20 million a day to people's pockets without any trace. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojiambo in Milwaukee, USA.
Kenya has denied accusations by Somalia that it is stirring up a conflict between the Somali federal government and Jubaland State, where fighting killed more than 20 people this week. Somalia insists that its neighbor is behind the political tension and insecurity. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Speaking to reporters in Nairobi Thursday, Kenya government spokesman Cyrus Oguna said his country has nothing to do with the tension between the Mogadishu administration and Jubaland Federal State.
As a country, we want to state very clearly and categorically that we will not accept to be drawn into internal politics of Somalia. We are therefore calling on all Somali leadership to desist from dragging Kenya into their domestic issues. We will, however, continue to push for peace and therefore urge all leaders in Somalia to create an environment that will facilitate the resolution of the conflict through dialogue.
On Monday, Jubaland forces and Somali government troops clashed in the town of Beledweyne on the Kenya-Somalia border. The fighting claimed the lives of 21 people, most of them children. At least 30,000 people have fled from their homes, according to the local aid agencies in the region. Mustafa Abdullahi's nieces were injured in Beledweyne and are receiving treatment in Mogadishu. My sister's house was hit by mortar in the Monday fighting in Beledweyne. Some of the children were injured and five died, he says. The two girls have received a lot of help and they will be in the hospital for at least 60 days. One of the girls is injured in the stomach and has a broken hand. The other one has suffered a broken hand and a leg. Visiting the town Thursday to assess the situation, Somalia's Information Minister Osman Dube told journalists his country wants peace but will defend itself from any internal and external attack. We will defeat anyone who attacks us. We will defeat both our enemies inside and outside of the country. We want peace. We want good neighborliness. We want brotherhood. But some people do not want to understand that, Dube says. We want our towns to be peaceful. We want Jubaland, Gedo and Beledweyne to be peaceful. When people refuse to understand that, then the option open for us is to defend ourselves. Somalia accuses Kenya of arming the Jubaland forces to attack government positions, an accusation denied by Kenyan officials. Kenya's spokesman Oguna says Kenya helps Somalia and a peaceful Somalia is beneficial to his country.
If this is a country where they run to institutions of violence, how then can we be the same country that is destabilizing that country, yet this is where they run for refuge? It beats logic, honestly. It would be really counterproductive for Kenya to destabilize Somalia in any way.
Kenya hosts 270,000 Somali refugees and tens of thousands live and work in small towns and cities. The East African nation is one of the African countries with a military presence under the AMISOM, is supporting the Somali government in their fight against terror group Al-Shabaab, which has threatened to overthrow the internationally recognized government. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
When U.S. President Joe Biden last week lifted the controversial Trump-era travel ban on 13 countries, it came as a jolt of hope to many, but experts say it will take time to unravel the regulations grounding so many travelers. Locals in Nigeria, Libya, and Sudan, three countries impacted by the ban, say resolving the damage caused by the ban may take even longer. VOA's Heather Murder report from Istanbul.
The coffee shop on this street in Tripoli, Libya, is closed because of the coronavirus pandemic. So Mohammed Abdul Wahab, 37, gets his to go and drinks it in the parking lot. When the U.S. travel ban originally was declared in 2017 by former President Donald Trump, it was quickly dubbed the Muslim ban because it originally applied to Muslim-majority countries, including Libya, and came after Trump promised to close borders to Muslims. When asked how the ban affected his life, Abdelwahab is thoughtful and a bit sad. He says he had wanted to go to graduate school in the U.S., but with the ban, he had no choice but to let go of that dream. Thousands of kilometers south, in Abuja, Nigeria, Wole Oleoye, a leading local journalist, is less sanguine. His son had already been accepted to a graduate program in California for artificial intelligence when Nigeria was added to the ban in early 2020. He never went.
I think that America should make up its mind whether it wants foreign students or not. You cannot allow your universities to go through the motions of requesting transcripts from universities, processing application for students, taking initial deposit, only for you to say the student cannot go.
About 4,000 kilometers west, in eastern Sudan, the lifting of the travel ban is cause for celebration in a country that has long suffered from international isolation. For decades, Sudan has not just been on the U.S. travel ban list, but on a list of states the U.S. said sponsored terrorism. In December, Sudan was also removed from the terror list.
For me, the issue is different. I can see as a long-term impact, by the way.
In a noisy cafe in Gedaref, Mohammed Ahmed, a 38-year-old civil servant, acknowledges it will take a long time, but said the moves could increase investment, development, and general prosperity in Sudan. Sarah Pierce, a policy analyst at the Washington-based Migration Policy Institute, says lifting the travel ban could also change the U.S. for the better.
Immigration is one of the greatest resources for the United States. It's the resource that this nation was built on. So the idea that we are just indiscriminately blocking certain populations is a huge loss to the United States. It's a loss of family reunification. It's a loss of potential workers and a lot of other intangible things that we can't quite measure.
Pierce says it will also take time for the U.S. to revisit denied visa applications and review new ones before eligible travelers are back on the road. Back in Nigeria, journalist Oleoye says it will also take time for the U.S. to recover its reputation among potential travelers who viewed the ban as anti-Muslim or racist. But he says by the time the pandemic subsides and the world is considered generally safe for travel again, he assumes that at least in Nigeria, the U.S. once again will become a darling for travelers. Heather Murdoch, VOA News, Istanbul.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, January 29th. The World Health Organization says COVID-19 fatigue in Africa has the potential to drive and produce subsequent new waves of the deadly infectious disease. WHO reports a cumulative total of 3.5 million cases of coronavirus in Africa and 88,000 deaths. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
In the past week, the WHO reports more than 175,000 new COVID-19 cases across Africa and 6,200 deaths. The UN Health Agency says cases and deaths are surging because of the appearance of more contagious variants of COVID-19 on the continent. The WHO says the 501YV2 variant, first identified in South Africa, has now spread to Botswana, Ghana, Kenya, Zambia, the French Indian Ocean region of Mayotte, and in 24 non-African nations. It says a new strain detected in Britain also now has been found in Gambia and Nigeria. WHO Regional Director for Africa, Machidiso Moeti, says the fear of these COVID-19 mutants circulating widely in other African countries keeps her awake at night.
In addition to the new variants, COVID-19 fatigue in the population and the aftermath of year-end gatherings and travel risk powering a perfect storm and driving up Africa's second wave and overwhelming health systems and facilities.
Moeti says Africa is at the crossroads and urges people to double up on public health measures to keep the virus from spreading. These include wearing masks, hand washing, and social distancing. The WHO reports only a few African countries, the Seychelles, Mauritius, Morocco, and South Africa, have received a small quantity of COVID-19 vaccines. WHO Program Area Manager, Immunization and Vaccine Development, Richard Mayigo, says he expects this woeful situation to turn around soon for the better.
With the latest announcement that was made through the COVAX facility, we are really hoping that the first dose is going to be started to roll out in Africa, probably by mid next month. And by March, we will definitely see most of the countries starting vaccinating with targeting the high-risk group.
While waiting for the vaccines to become available, Mayigo says WHO will be working with countries to make sure they are prepared to immediately begin inoculating their populations against COVID-19. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Tanzanian opposition politicians and activists have criticized President John Magufuli's dismissal of COVID-19 vaccine as ineffective as other African countries rush to get their people inoculated. Magufuli's critics have been pushing the government to clarify the status of the pandemic in Tanzania, which hasn't given official figures since May. Charles Kumbe reports from Dar es Salaam.
Tanzanian President John Magufuli's sharp rejection of COVID-19 vaccines was made Thursday with criticism, concern and confusion. Magufuli, in a speech Wednesday, scorned the idea of a lockdown to prevent the coronavirus from spreading and poured doubt on the effectiveness of vaccines. He claimed that Tanzanians vaccinated abroad had brought a coronavirus variant back to the country and repeated his stance that prayer and healing steam offered better protection.
Simameni imara. Chanjo hazifai.
You should stand firm, said Magufuli. Vaccinations are dangerous. He said if the white man was able to come up with vaccinations, he would have found a vaccination for AIDS, tuberculosis, malaria and cancer by now. Tanzania's opposition politicians criticized Magufuli's words as undiplomatic and sending a poor message to the world. Zitto Kabwe is a former member of parliament and a leader of the opposition Alliance for Change and Transparency Party.
Africa is struggling because of the limited supply of vaccination. And here you have a president of the second largest economy in East Africa. And this president saying that vaccinations are problematic. You know, this is extremely dangerous. And I really don't know how deadly this comment from the president will be going forward.
Tanzania's government stopped reporting cases of COVID-19 in May when it had 509 infections and 21 deaths. Magufuli said there was no need to report cases or take precautions against the virus because God had protected Tanzania from it. Tanzanian activists and critics have been posting on social media urging the government to reveal COVID-19 infections in the country. Kumbusha Dawson is an activist with the Change Tanzania organization. Dawson says he doesn't see any measures by the government, but it should be taking all necessary precautions and following the World Health Organization's advice. He says people should wear masks and wash their hands to keep Tanzanians safe from the coronavirus disaster. The WHO's Regional Director for Africa, Dr. Mashidiso Moeti, also urged Tanzanians on Thursday to ramp up public health measures. She tweeted that science shows vaccines work and encouraged Tanzania to prepare a COVID-19 vaccination campaign. The contrasting messages from the world and Magufuli leaves some Tanzanians, like Dar es Salaam resident Dorcas Msele, confused.
At least ule wakati ile mara kwanza ile.
She says at least during the first wave of the pandemic, they were given instructions on what to do, and schools were closed and all that. But now, says Msele, if people decide to wear a mask or not, it seems okay. If they wash their hands or not, still okay. Msele says it confuses us, and we don't know the extent of the problem. Magufuli was re-elected in a disputed October election, but has come under increasing criticism from opposition parties and Western governments for stifling democracy. Charles Kombe for VOA News, Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
Zimbabwe's government has set up a scale of fines for those who refuse treatment for COVID-19 or disobey orders to get a vaccine. Ade Gondo has more on the law passed this week.
Analysts say the statute gives wide latitude for law enforcement to charge those who might want to resist the government's planned COVID-19 vaccine rollout. Observers also say the offense for resisting compulsory treatment of COVID virus comes against a background in which famous religious figures have declared reservations about the vaccines, feeding into popular conspiracy theories. They include the influential and charismatic Prophet Makandiwa of the United Family in Christ megachurch. Legal analysts say the statute and other government measures to curb the global pandemic must be treated with caution. Human rights lawyer Doug Coltart weighs in.
Ordinarily, in normal circumstances, it would be considered unconstitutional or violation of rights for someone to undergo testing, especially if the results of that test are disclosed. You know, the right to privacy specifically includes the right not to have a health condition disclosed. But, you know, I think it's important to be aware that rights in the Constitution are not absolute and they can be limited in certain circumstances. I think this global pandemic may be justifiable in the circumstances to limit those rights. However, what I think is very problematic and unreasonable is the fact that enforcement of these regulations is being done by way of arresting people, detaining people in a condition actually conducive to spreading the virus even further.
Reporting for VOA, this is Ade Gondo in Zimbabwe.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa Sports, and here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Friday morning to you, Samson.
Good Friday morning to you too, James. We begin the sports with the latest from the CAF African Nations Championship, otherwise known as CHAN Holding in Cameroon. The lineup for the quarterfinals of the tournament is completed following the conclusion of matches in the group phase of the competition on Wednesday. The countries to play in the last eight of the tournament include Mali, Congo, Guinea, Rwanda, Morocco, Zambia, DR Congo, and Cameroon. There will be two rest days before the tournament resumes at the various venues this weekend. The quarterfinal will start this Saturday when Mali will play Congo at the Amadou Ahidjo Stadium in Yaoundé, while DR Congo will take on host Cameroon at the Japoma Stadium in Douala. On Sunday, Morocco will take on Zambia in Douala at the Reunification Stadium, while Guinea and Rwanda will clash at the Limpi Stadium. Chief Polo Polo of Zambia's keeper, Adrian Chima, has been speaking and sharing his thoughts ahead of Sunday's clash with defending champion Morocco.
A bigger challenge, but one which we are ready for. We are coming to this tournament. We had set our targets as a team. Our first target was to go past the group stage.
National team coach of Togo, Claude Leroy, who is providing technical assistance to the CHAN team, has commended CAF and Cameroon for putting up a good show so far.
When you see the quality of the organization of the CHAN, the quality of the training pitch, the stadium, the organization of the volunteers, the police, with everybody, the medical staff everywhere, I can tell you we are dreaming now of the next CAN, because I'm sure it will be the best CAN of ever in the history of African football.
Let's take a look at the summary of the statistics from the first round of the competition so far. There have been 14 wins, 10 of them are draws. Teams with the most wins include Mali, DR Congo, Morocco, Guinea, Zambia with 2 wins each, while teams with the least wins include Zimbabwe, Niger, Libya, Togo and Namibia with no wins at all. The most repeated result so far is 1-0. That scoreline has been recorded in 7 matches. Interestingly, a total of 46 goals have been scored so far. The most goals scored in a match was one involving Morocco and Uganda, where 7 goals were scored, and the match ended 5-2 in favor of the defending champions Morocco. Teams with the most goals scored are Morocco and Guinea with 6 goals each, while teams with the least goals scored is Namibia with no goals scored at all. Yakuba Gyanabari of Guinea is the top scorer in the group stages with 3 goals to his name. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson
Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. And that's it for this Friday, January 29th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.